Good evening, everyone. Derek Old School Fournier coming to you live from Studio 76 here in lovely Valrico, Florida. And it's interesting. I've got a new setup here because when Mark Cook decides he's actually going to come over to the house, I wanted to make sure I have headphones for him because he actually likes using headphones everywhere. So I'm trying to set that up. We're going to get that going. I want to thank everyone over in the chat room right now. I am still trying to fight off a nasty cold. And as many of you know, I plan on leaving for New Orleans because I have a ticket and all. On one of those planes on Friday morning. So the last thing that I need is to actually get sick. So I tried to sleep last night. I'm probably going to make sure that tonight is a relatively prompt show so that I can sleep tonight. That said, we have a lot of really great things to talk about and way better than we had last week when we had just gotten over having our teeth kicked in by the Atlanta Falcons. Now, I don't want us to get too excited about beating the Pittsburgh Steelers because you should never be too high or too low. You can guarantee you're screwed if you go in either one of those directions. But there are a lot of things that I think were very positive from the Steelers game, and we're going to cover all those things tonight. If you guys want to interact, obviously the chat room is up and running. Thanks to you guys who are already over in the chat room. I've got some interesting data from Jimmy Johnson. We'll go over some of that tonight. One of my many failures, and there are almost countless failures that I have assigned to me, is I haven't used his data enough, and I plan on trying to do more of that as we get further into the season. He has written up some great data for us, and I think a lot of you guys, and I see Ed over in the chat room, Ed's one of those guys who I think would really dig some of this information that Jimmy's able to get when he's doing the scouting of the team the way another team would scout us, and that's some pretty powerful pieces to work with. So I see Spent is texting me on the back end, and I can't, that's the one level that I can't get to. I can't have the chat room, the Twitter feed, and everything, and the cell phone going at the same time. It's impossible. We will be having Steve White call in at about 9:30. He'll call in. We're going to try and limit him as well. Nothing on Tom Brady. Don't worry. We give zero fucks about Tom Brady unless we're playing Tom Brady. Steve will call in about 9:30. We'll have him for about 15 minutes. He's also nursing an illness, but I think he's going to want to revisit some of the things we discussed last week. One of the things about the show last week, if you recall, if you were with us last week, and if you're listening on the podcast and you've listened to the show from last week, was that Steve and myself, when we were talking about the sort of amazing backlash that occurred after the Atlanta Falcons game, and certainly there was sort of a cumulative effect from the first couple of weeks of the season as well. I haven't seen it this pronounced in all of my years watching football, whatever the hell that means, but certainly in the 9 seasons we've been doing What the Buck, how reactionary the fan base and the media have become. And we only know the media from our narrow scope, the local media here, and we only know our fans really that closely here in our scope as well. But it was astonishing to me and to Steve and to many others, I'm not saying we were the only two off on an island thinking this, how dramatic people had gotten. I do give a lot of zero fucks, you're right, Calico. I apologize for the reentrant use of that catchphrase, but I mean, that's sort of what a catchphrase is, I guess. And to recap what Steve has sort of pointed out was, the guys are not executing. Now, we talk about that all the time. It comes down to execution. You can have the greatest scheme in the world or the worst scheme in the world, and depending on execution, the outcome can be totally different. So we will absolutely make sure that we discuss what was different from an execution perspective tonight when we have Steve on the air as well. Now, let me set the stage with a couple of big thank yous and some updates on what's going on in the What the Buck universe and in the What the Buck family. First of all, we had an amazing watch party. This is one of those things that absolutely floors me. And we talked about last year, I think our tailgate, we were 0-8 going to this tailgate. We thought we'd have about 16 people at this tailgate. We ended up having like 400 or 500 people at the tailgate. And as much as we bitch about the fans sometimes, and by the fans, I don't mean you guys, you know, because we know who you guys are. There are a lot of fans that are very, I don't know, flippant, fickle. There's a bunch of words for it. And it frustrates the hell out of people sometimes. And I'm one of those people. but I can't hold them responsible for not taking a Sunday away from their family or coming up to Wing House and hanging out with us and watching the game, especially after having come out Thursday night and watching us get run out of the freaking building, right? So we had no idea what to expect at Wing House on Sunday this week for the Steelers watch party, and all we did was fill up about two-thirds of the restaurant with Bucks fans. We knew about half of the folks that were there. The other half were awesome. We had a great time with some great people. We did some terrific raffle prizes, and there's a story that I want to tell that I think bears telling. We gave away three major prizes. For those of you who were there, you remember when Eliza came back up with the buckets and she had collected the money in the beer bucket that we'd gotten from Wing House. I heard jingling, and I kind of snickered. I said, "Really, change?" And she said, "Yeah." She goes, "There's a little girl who bought one ticket with her own money from her piggy bank." Now, something happens. For those of you who listen to the podcast, those of you who are in the chat room, when you have kids, and I can't explain this any better than I can do right here, so hopefully this will work. Once you have kids, really strange shit affects you. It is amazing. AT&T commercials, goofy shit. If you have kids, all of a sudden, even the most stone-cold dude will get teary-eyed about. So I heard it was a little girl who had used her piggy bank money. I thought that was really sweet, really cute. Lo and behold, when we draw the raffle ticket for the Gerald McCoy signed football, it turns out to be her ticket. She bought one ticket with $5 in dimes and quarters and won the ticket. And here she comes up in her Buccaneer jersey and her throwback Buccaneer hat with probably 15 signatures on it. I don't know that anyone has ever been as excited to win a raffle prize as this little girl. I went over and talked to her and her family afterwards, and maybe I was the only one who made the connection, but with this month being all about pediatric cancer, any parents out there, even people who aren't parents, who just have an affection for children, right? I mean, when you think about what this is that we're doing this month, and I am not religious, you guys know that. That's not my shtick. I have all the respect in the world for you guys who are. That was pretty damn impactful to see that. So it was really cool. I know that's a side story, but big shout out to her and for winning the Gerald McCoy ball. Her dad was taking pictures of her with it and everything, so that's great. I'm glad it went to a fan who really, really would love it. Thanks to everyone who donated. We're going to be announcing our total donations for this month, which will go to One Voice. I'm going to talk to Cheryl about this and see if we can get the logistics lined up to maybe have Marianne and some of the crew out with us, maybe even at our next What the Pewter broadcast on the 10th at Wing House to give them their check for this month. I don't have the final numbers on it. We'll announce those when we actually do the event, but I know our target was 5,000. I think we're pretty damn close to it. So big shout out to all you guys, whether it was at the tailgates, at the watch parties, through the 32 auction online. Thank you to the folks that bid on that. We're going to continue to do that as well. The outpouring of support for the charitable work that we do via What the Buck Really Matters never ceases to amaze me. So thank you guys for everything that you do. And as we continue to do it throughout the year, thank you for your continued support. This month will be us supporting the KBR crew, Eliza and her whole team and the entire KBR group. Sorry about that noise, guys. With their breast cancer work. And then the second half will be on the spring. Sizzle asks, we're going to print a big giant check. I actually looked at big giant checks today online. You can get ones that are pre-made. They cost you like $50. I'm pretty sure I can have Matt build one on a poster board. I'm hoping it doesn't look like cheese. And I may get one that's on a whiteboard. We are going to do a huge check, but we're not going to Happy Gilmore style let her keep it. We'll give her a real check that she can then go and take to their bank to make their contribution. So I just couldn't be more pleased with how this thing has turned out. So you guys are awesome. Thank you guys for allowing us to do that and for making such an impact in the community. Other shout-outs to our sponsor, Steakhouse Elite, Elder Ford of Tampa. Condolences. They lost their matriarch. Irma Elder, I believe was the name, and if I screwed that up, I apologize. Obviously, the Elder Ford family is feeling that loss, so our thoughts go out to them. Jesse James Spirit Full Throttle Saloon Shine, AFD Limited for the additional piece of sponsorship on our liquor sponsorship, and then Crew Blackbeard's Revenge. As I mentioned in passing, the next What the Pewter podcast is currently slated for the 10th of October, and it will be at our Wing House. So we'll get that all solidified and let you guys know what that is. Those have been fun. For anyone who's come out to them, hopefully you've had a good time. I know we have. We've had a good time. And we'll continue to do those. We'll confirm the dates. And also with the fundraising, we'll make sure that we know whether it's going to be on that day and if Marianne and her team can come out to accept that check. It'll be a very happy day, I think, for everybody. So I made the comment about the month being split. We'll get you the information on that. That auction should be live in the next couple of days. You guys will see some amazing items on there. To continue the fundraising that we do. So, other house cleaning. Patches are really good writer. Again, I hope you guys are reading his stuff. I know Shucker's reading it. I see him commenting out there. I think a lot more of you guys are reading it as well. We just published his recap from the Steelers. He's getting those things up faster than we're publishing them. That's on my that's my fault. We've got to get the editorial process better, and that's on me. But he's got two more that are coming out very closely here that will come out before the Saints game. So keep an eye out for those. And when you see him, if you don't mind resharing them and commenting, that would be great, because we really do like the work he's doing. I think it's some quality reporting as well. It's not your typical three sentences on what someone else thought about something. It's actually genuine content, which I'm a big fan of. Other notes, news and notes, and well, you know me. I don't like to avoid topics of conversation, especially the heated ones or interesting ones. The first one that I think is on the top of everyone's mind after you get over the whole discussion about us beating the Steelers is the quarterback discussion. And I got into a very heated discussion with a guy who I like immensely, Mitch Bucktastic Phelps. He was one of the many people at our watch party, and he came over and asked the same questions that everyone asks about quarterbacks. So I want to make sure we address this. I want to get it out of the way quickly, and we can continue to discuss it later if you guys want to, but I think there's other things we should talk about. First and foremost, Mike Glennon did a great job. Now, Mike Glennon didn't go out there and look like Drew Brees, mind you, but Mike Glennon did a great job, and in the last drive especially, his poise and composure and accuracy was tremendous, and that was great. I have not said anything bad about Mike Glennon, and I want to make sure you guys realize that. My point is, and I still stand by this, and I tried to explain this to Mitch, but I did a very, very bad job of it, and I think it's because I was actually very claustrophobic, and I was sweaty because it was hot as nuts at Wing House, and we're still trying to get that fixed. My belief is, and has been from the beginning, that Josh McCown is a better quarterback than Mike Glennon. I'm not shirking that. I base that on my knowledge of the game and what I've seen in training camp, in addition to what I've seen in the actual games. Now, we can agree to disagree on that, and we can compare resumes and whatever you want to do. That's fine. That's not going to get us any closer. Because until I see a body of work that makes me think otherwise, I will think that. Now, that being said, as I said in the last podcast, I've said all along, I'm a Bucs fan. I'm not a Josh McCown fan. I want the Bucs to win. So I want the guy that gives him the best chance. Glennon was our guy. I wanted him to do well. And you know what? He did. He did well. Intermittently had some bad things. But when I go back and look through my notes, I have way more positives than negatives on what Mike Glennon was able to do in that game. Now, I think a lot of that came from some of the other improvements across the board. But that's great. You can't take that away from him. I can't say, oh, well, you have to deal with a more fierce pass rush. The offensive line has to suck a little bit more for me to compare you, because I don't give a fuck about comparing you. I want you to beat the Steelers. Just like this week, I want to go in and I want to beat the Saints with Mike Glennon if he's under center. That's fine. Now, I do find it funny that everyone's focusing on whether Lovie will commit to Glennon and what this is going to do to his psyche and all this other bullshit. It's more of the TMZification of the sports universe that just makes me fucking sick. How about we watch the game? How about we do that? How about we use data and not the absence of data? So, I will say this, without a doubt, the arm strength, and Skip and I have gone back and forth about this. I think it was Skip and I, maybe Calico and I, in the chat room. Fuck, that's obnoxious. Jesus Christ. Sorry, guys. I don't have a way to turn that down real quick without worrying about screwing up Skype, so I'm not going to screw with it. But as I get mail, you're going to have that kind of stuff happen, and I do apologize. But what I was saying was the arm strength that you guys have talked about that I have seen intermittently, and I've made that comment. There are times where Glennon does look like he has a good arm, a strong arm. I mean, he's got a good arm. He's a quarterback in the NFL, for fuck's sake. But that strength that everyone talks about, it seemed to come and go. There was no attachment on your email, Jimmy. You'll have to send it again. I didn't see an attachment. I saw the... There it is. Got it. Thank you. Hopefully I'm not blowing you guys' ears out when that happens, but if I am, I got nothing for you. I can't fix it quickly. So, but I saw that arm strength that you guys have talked about, and I saw what I had seen intermittently. That is great. There are a couple of throws that are just fucking ridiculously good throws. The throw to Mike Evans down the left-hand side was stupid. It's a ridiculous throw, and that's great when he can get in here and make those throws. The throw to Lewis Murphy that sets us up on the four-yard line, first of all, that route combination is very good. That's a great play call by Coach Arroyo. Murphy makes the break. Great throw, great placement, great velocity, lets him get the ball in stride, which was tremendous. That sizzle, I think that's exactly the pass that I was just talking about. I know we have a lag in the chat room. But it wasn't just, you know, those throws. There are a couple of just flat-out big-time throws. And they weren't all the distance throws. Some of them were, the one to Shepard for the first down, the one to ASJ to get us a position when it was third and a fucking mile, right? There are some great throws that this kid made, and not all of them were in cuts as well. That's one of the things I've said is a problem of his in the past, going outside the hash, he's had a real problem with. He did not have that much of a problem with it against the Steelers, which was tremendous. Now, from a plus perspective, and I'll actually jump ahead. We'll do Swords and Skulls later because we actually had a game worth doing Swords and Skulls on. So we'll cover those and we'll go over to the Facebook. So to the Facebook, as it was called apparently originally, to get your Swords and Skulls. But I'm not making any bones about it. Now, I could call out Gerald McCoy as a sword because I think Gerald McCoy is a one-man wrecking ball, and you saw how quickly the defensive line looked better when he was in the game. But holy shit. I don't know that – if you're going to give a disproportionate amount of shit to the quarterback when we do poorly, then I want to give a disproportionate amount of praise to the quarterback when we do well. And to be honest, I don't think it's that disproportionate. Mike Glennon came up big in big times. Were there some bad throws? Yes, we're down in the red zone. We've got what's called a Pac-Man route combination, which is a post-corner route. It's exactly the right play call. He throws it behind into the inside and ends up being incomplete. It's a simple throw, but it happens, guys. I'm not going to beat a guy up for that. That shit happens. Hell, Ben Roethlisberger blew two wide-open passes, and no one's jumping his side, right? Was Murphy and AJ supposed to be so close to each other on that route? Yeah, so what's supposed to happen on that route is you force the backside defense to force them to get into their back pedal. He's able to sneak up underneath them. It's almost like a pick without contact. To answer Ed's question in the chat room. So on that particular route, you're clearing him out so he can come underneath. It's almost like the drag routes from the West Coast offense, only instead of running them within, 5 yards of the line of scrimmage, you're running it 15, 16 yards downfield. Now, Jimmy in the chat room makes a comment about Martin picking up the blitz, and that's true. There were a number of times where he did well, much better than he's done in the past. I will talk about the run blocking, and I was trying to get a video capture of what's happening because I think it will expose a couple things that we've been talking about, and it's amazingly fundamental. But I couldn't get it done before the show, so I'll probably try and do it maybe this weekend when I'm in New Orleans if I'm not too drunk and get that done. What was I going to say? Shit. Martin did a great job. Why the running back pass? WTB Commissioner over in the chat room says, why the pass for the running back? Because you want to mix things up. Here's the thing. If you call the same plays all the time, you get yelled at because you're predictable. If you call different plays and you get yelled at because it's a different play, they didn't expect the trickery. They just didn't. When we ran the end around to Solomon Patton, no one in the fucking entire area up there had any idea, which is why he was able to run for a billion miles without even being touched. So I have no problem with a halfback pass there. I assume we practiced the play. What I do have a bit of a problem with is he threw it into coverage. Now, he threw it long, which was the right way to throw it. That play has all the motion going to the left-hand side to make it an easier throw for a guy who doesn't throw the ball a lot. Where, realistically, if Vincent had cut back to the middle of the field, there was no defense on the backside. But that would have been a much more tough throw, and it would have also been dangerous because if it did get undercut, that guy runs until he gets to wherever hell the strip clubs are in Pittsburgh. So, Skip Brown over in the chat room, who's been an ardent detractor of Michael Johnson, just gave credit where credit is due. Michael Johnson had a good game, and still, he's playing on one foot. If you watch him in between plays, he's hopping off that foot. And in fact, I think it was towards the end of the first quarter, he got rolled up on again. It looked like the same leg. The sack with the strip fumble, I have no idea how you leave the defensive end completely unblocked. Right, that could not have been the design. It could not have been the design for the back, who I think started off on the other side of the field, to come across. Did I really just say across? That's not a word. To come across the lineup to pick up Michael Johnson, that can't have been the plan. But you do with what you've got. The sack from McCoy, he just absolutely abused the guard with one hand, which is great. And when you see the defense notch five sacks, Scott Solomon used that edge rush, which is great. And as Jimmy mentions in the chat room, even when we didn't get the sack, we were getting pressure. And we talk about this all the time. It's not always about the sack. The sack is the thing everyone looks at. And there are going to be some great audio drops if anyone chooses to grab some from this section. Sometimes it's just the pressure. Now, we're going to talk a little bit about coverage zones and where we're getting beaten up. Now, I know I'd asked Jimmy if he could give me breakdowns on when we were in Tampa 2, because people started beating up the Tampa 2, and most of the people beating up the Tampa 2 couldn't diagram the Tampa 2 on the board if you fucking asked them to. Little moral to the story is, if you're going to talk about schematics, you better learn the schematics, because if you don't know the schematics, shut the fuck up. I would love to know how often we're actually in a Tampa 2 coverage. Because if you're going to beat up the Tampa 2, you've got to know that. Now, that being said, there are zones that we are leaving open consistently. Absolutely consistently. So whether we're in a Tampa 2 coverage, whether we're in a standard cover 2, whether in cover 3, whether we're in some sort of cloud coverage or in man, we don't know. We don't know what the play call is. And that's where it's tough for Jimmy to go do that. He has to look at and if you guys are watching the game with me, when you're watching the middle linebacker and his reads, if there's play action, he's got to read. When he sees it's not a run, he's got to get back into his drop because he's got to get back to the deep third and cover that middle tunnel. Okay, gives us a three across look in the Tampa 2. That is a primary difference. Now, I didn't plan to go this route this quickly, but I think I'm going to because we're talking about it and such. Let me transition over here. There's an article that I will link to you guys. It's actually from National Football Post. And if you guys don't read National Football Post, you should. Matt Bowen, if you don't follow him on Twitter, you should. He breaks down coverages. He breaks down defenses. He breaks down offenses. What you see here in red are the coverage areas and responsibilities. In yellow, you see how he chooses to attack with one particular play, the flag route. I see Jimmy's talking about Matt Bowen, right? Now, the flag route, if you guys will recall, how many times we have been beaten. Now, he doesn't talk about going to the seam, right? In this diagram, he's not talking about going to the seam, which would be, let me see if I can draw on this, which would be either side of this area in the hashes. And that, wow, that was obnoxious. That was Mark Cook calling in. I guess I should probably answer when he calls in instead of just hanging up because it made such a loud fucking noise. I didn't expect him to call in, but I will answer if he calls back. So this is the seam route that you see the tight ends going in, going over the middle linebacker and in front of the safeties. But this is the one that we're getting asked. Hey, Mark, how are you, sir?
Good. How are you doing?
Good. Good. I didn't know you were calling in, sir, so I accidentally hung up on you because it was really, really loud.
Oh, sorry about that.
That's not your fault. You can't control the volume.
I was calling in either until I was listening to the show and I couldn't stand it anymore. I'm kidding.
Hey, no, I get that a lot.
It was good.
I get that a lot. So what exactly forced you into a call?
Nothing. No, you asked me if maybe I could call in tonight. I said we'd play by ear and it worked out. If you've got a few minutes for me, if you get another guest coming on, that's fine too. But
no, we can anyway. We can talk for a few minutes. I've got Steve coming on at 9:30, but why don't we chat some before he calls in?
Okay, sounds good.
All right,
good.
So I was going into some Tampa 2 discussion, but we can all. I'd rather get some Pewter Report insight. We got Mark Cook, the ginger badass, on the line. What are you hearing from One Buck Place?
Well, I mean, they understand that, you know, they won. I think they also understand that, you know, they were fortunate to win to a degree because, you know, there were a lot of things left out on the field offensively and a lot of holes that have got to be fixed before this week. You know, I don't think the Saints receivers are going to drop, you know, a flea flicker pass like Antonio Brown did at one point. And, you know, a couple things, but you understand what I'm saying.
Yeah.
But you know what? Every team and every game has that. The Buccaneers made some mistakes. The Pittsburgh made some mistakes. The bottom line is the Buccaneers were able to find a way to win. And there's a huge relief from everybody in the organization because, you know, we talked about last year and the 0-8 start and how the pressure mounts and continues to mount until you get that first win. Now, that's not to say the Bucs aren't going to lose their next five or six. We don't know. But the pressure of getting that first win is finally off, and something the players talked about last year, you know, as the pressure was mounting to get that first win, and then even some players off the record I talked to last week, we were talking about that. I mean, how, you know, and I'll just say I think it was Akeem Spence specifically that I remember talking about. He says, man, we need that first one. And, you know, because he was here last year. He saw that 0-8 start. And you know, one turns into two and two turns into four. And next thing you know, you're at 0-8. And so, I mean, it was important for him to get that win, however they were able to do it. You know, I've listened to you talk a little bit about some of the play calling. I thought Marcus Arroyo did a really, really good job, you know, right out of the gate. You know, they got that fumble. They ran Martin, I think, for 2 yards, and then they went straight to the end zone. And you know what? Attack. That's what they've got to do. And a lot of people have been commenting that, you know, they're finally, and you could talk to Steve about this because he broke the game down. I also watched the All-22, but he certainly has a lot better understanding and perspective than I do. But I think that he'll point out that the Steelers really dared the Buccaneers to do some of the things they do. And some of these other teams they've played through the first 3 weeks weren't going a lot of single high safety and going one-on-one on the outside. So, and Marcus Arroyo kept saying that during his press conferences after the first 3 weeks. You know, we want to take shots, but it has to be predicated on what the defense is doing. And Pittsburgh allowed them to do that. But I think he was also aggressive in his play calling. The halfback pass, to me, I thought was a great play call. And the reason I say that is because they ran a toss to the right side right before that to Bobby Rainey, and they immediately ran the toss to the left. Now, I'm not knocking the Buccaneer defense, but I guarantee you, had Pittsburgh done that in that game, they would have scored on that because the safeties, the cornerbacks, the linebackers would have bit on the toss because they had just ran it the play before, if you understand what I'm saying.
Yep.
Pittsburgh's defense, obviously, a lot more disciplined and understanding the system than the Buccaneers' defense. So I really thought that was, truthfully, I really thought that may have been his best play call of the whole game. It didn't work. But that's only because one player was disciplined enough. But if you watch the all 22 of that, there are players that get sucked up on that. But again, they're just a veteran defense, and they were more disciplined. But if that was the Buccaneer defense, they would have absolutely bit on him. The receiver would have been wide open in the end zone. So I like the aggressiveness by Marcus Arroyo. I think he's going to get better as the season goes on. He has to, because I don't think he had a great first three games of the year. But, I mean, it's a comfort level for everybody, new players, new coaches, and certainly when you get thrust into a coordinator position. And one thing before I keep rambling on and you cut me off is this was his first week where Lovie said, this is yours. You know what I mean? It's always been, well, is Jeff involved? Is Jeff not involved? And we've got four or five assistants pitching it. I think this week that Marcus Arroyo could do what he wanted to do game plan-wise. And truthfully, they didn't have a lot to lose. They were 0-3. They were big underdogs going into this game. So calling an aggressive game, I thought, was a smart ploy by him. Because if it didn't work, he could always go back to the detractors and say, hey, we threw 10 deep balls and ended up getting four of them picked off. You know, so you understand what I'm saying? So
I
think it was all in all, you know, everything worked out in their favor. You know, but there's a lot of things that have got to get patched up. I was watching the All 22, and I would love to sit with Steve and watch and learn, because I don't know what he knows, obviously, about defenses and certain coverages. But you know, I did some screenshots last night of a 3rd and 10 play, and the Buccaneers were playing a single high safety. Leonard Johnson releases his man. The only person that really stuck with their man was Jonathan Banks. Technically, when I did a freeze or a screenshot, he probably could have got a call for illegal contact, but basically you had Deshaun Golson back there trying to decide which of these three free wide receivers am I going to try and cover right now.
Right.
And those are scary things. Now, maybe the Buccaneers just caught them, you know, maybe the Pittsburgh Steelers just caught the Buccaneers, but truthfully, at 3rd and 10, again, I don't know. I'm not a coach. I don't understand the whole philosophy behind what they're trying to do. But that was really puzzling to me, and there were numerous cases in that game where, to me, it didn't look like they were in the best coverage to be in 3rd and long. And we saw them complete some, you know, more than one, you know, 3rd and 7 in that game. There were several in that game that, you know, you like to think is to the defense's advantage when you get them in 3rd and 7 or longer, and somehow Pittsburgh was able to complete or convert a lot of those.
Well, I think one of the tricky things, and maybe the three of us can get together, you, Steve, and I, and just have a big-ass video panel up and go through this, because I went through a bunch of film as well, and I just think it's geeky shit and a lot of fun. But one of the things you have to do is get comfortable enough in your base is, whatever defense you're playing, where you can then disguise things and roll coverage. And right now, like Dane Fletcher, when he's in that mic position, he's trying his hardest to get to his drop zones and get where he's supposed to be. But it's like he doesn't understand when he can't get to the spot to just lay out and go, become pass defender. Because the days of, like, the Tampa 2, if you were going to get beat, and I'm not saying how often we're in Tampa 2, but when you're in a zone coverage like that where you want to keep things in front of you, you're depending on the ability to beat the shit out of that guy if he does make the catch and hope to get some drops and maybe some picks. Well,
right
now, if you dare hit someone, they're all defined as defenseless. For fuck's sake, Heath Miller in the end zone.
Right.
Defenseless receiver? Are you out of your tree? Now, I get it. He hit him in the head. Say helmet-to-helmet contact and make me feel better about it.
Right. You are preaching to the choir on this. I have been so frustrated, and not just in Buccaneer games but other games. There is no question about it. It has absolutely affected the way that Mark Barron and Deshaun Golson play football. They're playing apprehensive. They are trying not to get these penalties, and they're not playing on instinct. And part of that is, in my opinion, they're not being aggressive, and I think it's hurting the team in general. And
Mark,
you know,
let me grab Steve and let him know what's going on here. I'll try and switch back over to you. If not, I'll hit you up on Facebook real quick.
All right.
Hey, Steve, is that you, man?
Yeah, that's me.
Hey, I had Mark Cook. It was a surprise call in. I didn't know he was going to be there, so I wanted to make sure I switched over and grabbed you. I've told him to wait because you were the scheduled guest. Thank you for calling in this evening. How are you doing?
Everything's good. I try to be fast so you don't have to wait that long.
No, no, don't worry about it, man. We got you on here. We got Mark on here, too. And then all the levels sound good. It's not if you're on a different phone or not, but damn, it sounds good. So last week, you said, okay, don't start.
I can't hear you.
You can't hear me?
No.
Oh, hold up.
I can hear you at first, now I can't hear you.
Okay, hold up. I'll fix that. Is that better?
Yeah,
okay.
Much better.
There we go. So my side was low, and your side was great. Okay, right. So last week you came on. You said, all right, guys, listen, don't board up the windows. Don't run away. The team is actually going to be okay. We're going to be just fine. And what happened? We went out there and played a damn good game against a pretty decent team, admittedly hurt, and now all of a sudden people are talking a whole different story. What did you see in that game that impressed you the most, and what scared you the most?
Well, I think the most impressive thing to me was the offensive coordinator opened up the playbook. Marcus Arroyo, which is something I actually talked about on my pregame show on Sunday, he took ownership of being the offensive coordinator and kind of put his own imprint on the game plan. You saw a whole bunch of down the field passes, a whole lot of route combinations that were set up to push the ball down the field. You saw that we weren't as predictable. We threw the ball when we were under center. We ran a little bit when we were in shotgun. And so, to me, the most impressive thing was the evolution of his game planning, because you saw some of the same looks from the Steelers that we saw in the first three games. And I don't know if you recall this, he actually said something like they hadn't had the looks for the fade routes. Well, we threw them anyway against the Steelers, and a lot of those came out pretty good for us. So I was really impressed with the way he evolved as calling the game against the Steelers.
Well, that's certainly good. And we talked a little bit about that this evening, about the play calling, which is good. And I think you pointed out a similar thing to Mark and I, which is he now has – it's his play calling, which is terrific. Now, offensively, we had a bit of a lull in the middle. I want to look at some film with you. I know you're a defensive guy, but you know a lot about how to defeat blocking as well, which is really important. At 6:19 in the first quarter, there's a really good example of what I think is wrong more often, which is in zone blocking, our guys really don't have a clue of who they're supposed to be assigned to. They let not one, not two, but three defenders go straight through to blow up a run and play 6 yards in the backfield, and it wasn't because they missed a block, right? They were going
to the wrong guy.
They thought they were going to the right guy.
Yeah.
And so
a similar thing happened later on in the game where 97 Cam Hayward, Ironhead's son, is lined up between our center and the right guard, and both guys decide they're going to block somebody else, and that didn't work out really well for us. It didn't help that they had Polamalu screaming in from the edge. And, I give props to the receiver, Lewis Murphy, having a big game, but he didn't look too enthusiastic about blocking Polamalu. And so Polamalu already came in almost unblocked, you could say. And here's Cam Hayward, all 300 and whatever pounds of him, screaming right at our running back as he's getting the handoff. It was actually a great thing that Bobby Rainey just held on to the ball, to be
right.
honest with you, and kind of made a miss. He ended up getting tackled, but I thought he was about to get obliterated.
Yeah, and that's something I think that we can show the fans, if I can figure out how to rip that audio or the video down. You do it on your iPad or something. I don't do that. I do it on the computer, and I can't do the clips the way you do with the markups and the annotations. Because once you see that, once you understand what they're supposed to do, and God help us, they better be doing that in the film room, right? Because then, once this offense is actually able to run, these receivers, and I hate that Evans got hurt, because I'll tell you what, right now, I haven't bought an actual player jersey in a long time. Long time, because I get tired of him going to other places. But I don't know about you, but Mike Evans is playing some damn good ball.
Oh, yeah. And that's what I was looking for out of him. I broke him down before the draft, and he was just an amazing talent. Had a few temperament issues as far as, a couple of times he lost his cool in college last season during the game. But, he's a total package. Long arms, can jump fast. He's everything you want, and he's tall, of course. And we haven't been using him to his fullest extent. You know, we're trying to run him on five-yard routes like this is a West Coast offense, and he's 5'9 and 185 pounds. We finally got the best out of him by running him up the field, which is what he does best, which is what he did at Texas A&M, which is why we got him so high in the draft. And now, you know, the guy gets hurt. And I'll tell you what, the play he gets hurt on, you know, he knows it's about to be a disaster. He pulls his groin. He's obviously hurting. But he still limps all the way down the field and takes up two blockers trying to make the tackle.
Did you hear his, did you hear his comment?
I really can't respect.
Did you hear his comment after the game when they asked him about the injury?
No.
He said the thing he was most upset about was he didn't grab the cornerback and stop the interception.
I mean, he tried. Yeah. He really did try. You see guys fully healthy that don't give the kind of effort he gave to try to get down there and you know, make that tackle. So definitely encouraging things from him. I hope he gets back as soon as possible. Groins are kind of tricky, especially for a guy that has to cut a lot. But, man, he looked great in that game.
Well, and I, you know, going into the bye week with the injury count they gave in weeks, I don't think that was a mistake. I think that gives him a chance to get that extra week with the bye week and get him back healthy. They definitely don't want to rush that back and hurt the kid. He's been playing so damn well. And hey, you know, Lewis Murphy, who you bring back in after the back injury, you know, the Steelers announcers, God love him, you know, they picked him off the scrap heap. No, we actually know what Lewis Murphy is. He got hurt. Played pretty good football, and I saw Shepard catch a pass, which I didn't think I would ever see in this lifetime.
Yeah. Well, you know, guy got an opportunity and made the most of it, and thankfully so, because we needed somebody to make a play right then.
Absolutely. Now, on the defensive side, what I was going down was sort of zone coverage and gaps in the zones, and the two places where we keep getting punched, it's almost like a, and I'm going to equate this exactly the way I think a lot of fans think about football, it's almost like Madden. If you're playing Madden and someone doesn't know how to defend a corner route, they're going to keep throwing the damn corner route until you figure out how to defend it. So right now, whether it's a corner or a flag, depending on how they get their receivers out there, there are a couple of zones in this defense that people just find, and they just keep beating us over the head with them and beating us over the head with them. You've been on the in the defensive film rooms. You've been in the backside of this. What does a defense do to go back and look at the film where they say, okay, every tight end in the world can go down the seam on us, or any receiver actually can go down the seam on us, and anyone who runs flags to the outlet or flag routes or corners can get us because our corners and our safeties aren't passing off their responsibilities properly, depending on what defense is called. What do you think is going on behind closed doors there?
Well, here's really the essential problem right now. We're starting Dane Fletcher at middle linebacker, and he might be the worst starting linebacker in the NFL. And that's not hyperbole. That is straight ahead fact. And I'm not going to pile on him, because he's not supposed to be starting. It's supposed to be Mason Foster. He's supposed to be a special teams guy, and he's pretty good at that. He's not really good at playing middle linebacker. Here's a guy that's standing right in front of his gap several times during the game. All he has to do is run through his gap, and he makes a tackle for loss probably. He goes and tries to seal somebody else's gap, and guess where the ball goes? I say this all the time. We play a one-gap defense. That's what we played back when I was playing, and that's what we play now. We love it. And the thing about a one-gap defense is if you're out of your gap, some kind of way, I don't give a damn where the ball starts, it's going to find its way into your gap where you're supposed to be, and the whole defense will be exposed. And that's what happened when you saw the few breakout runs, and they didn't have, like, you know, the 50-yard runs, but the 13, 14, 15-yard runs, this is Dane Fletcher pretty much every time. This is not filling his gap. And it's hard to do. It's hard to do when you're lined up in the A-gap, and it's right there and it's wide open. They're blocking both defensive tackles. Nobody's blocking you. And you decide, to hell with that. I'm going to go over there on the other side B-gap and leave my A-gap wide open. But he found a way to do it several times. And so you got that against the run, and then against the pass, the play action pass, we're in cover two. We actually played quite a bit of Tampa 2 this week, so if we'd have lost and people would have blamed Tampa 2, guess
it
would have
been appropriate.
They'd have been right. Why? Because our middle linebacker has no effing clue how to play Tampa 2. Seriously. Most teams, and you can look, here's a clue for listeners out there who aren't really, you know, football savvy. They like football, but they don't necessarily understand it real well. If you want to know when we're playing Tampa 2, on other teams, what you'll see is the middle linebacker will line up a little bit deeper than the other two linebackers beside him, and then he'll get deep down the middle of the field defending the seam. Okay, that's because our two safeties are going to split, and the middle of the field is a little bit wide open. Not Dane Fletcher. Dane Fletcher feels like he needs to make the tackle on Tampa 2, see? He needs to go up there and play the run on Tampa 2. So he's gung-ho and bites on every single play-action fake known to man, which leaves the tight end what? Wide the hell open every single time. It's 2nd and 17. At the end of the game.
Let him run.
When everybody knows, look, they're going to try to push the ball up the damn field. 2nd and 17, they got trips out wide. All he has to do, he's lined up on the tight end, who's the third guy, that's his guy, going up the seam. All he has to do is play the tight end. We're probably going to get a sack. What does Dane Fletcher do? I want to play the run. So he steps inside to play the run. By the time he knows it's pass, where's the tight end? Why the hell open up the seam? So, there's a problem in a nutshell. Now, other guys haven't played great either. I talked about our safeties. They play a little bit better. Mark Barron, well, let's just say he can't cover Heath Miller, so I have a lot of concerns about what we're going to see this week
with Jimmy Graham.
Jimmy Graham.
Yeah.
But if you had to point to one thing, and it's one glaring thing on our defense that would help us a lot, is that we had a better damn little linebacker. Just not a great guy. We don't need the second coming of Ray Lewis or Urlacher. Just a guy that is average would help us a lot right now inside.
Well, and it speaks to what you discussed on last week's show. When you have one guy who's not doing their job, there's a trickle-down effect. And while certainly I've seen Deshaun Goldson jack up his assignments more often than Mark Barron, though I certainly haven't seen a lot of great stuff out of Barron either, if they expect the Mike to be back in that middle third, and they're supposed to be able to spread, right, to go to the other sides, but he's never getting back there, no wonder there's something in the back of their head. You know, I don't know whether it's a chicken and egg situation here where they expect him to fuck it up, and so they're trying to cover for his ass, or what's going on?
Look. Mark, Deshaun Goldson, who, you know, once again, I was talking bad about him last week, too.
Yep.
Actually played pretty well while he was in there. But here's the thing. I go back to this dumbass disguising that we're doing.
With the A-gaps?
We're disguising what coverages we're running, and nobody believes it.
Right.
So I don't know why we're even doing it. We got one guy, you know, lined up in the box. Everybody knows he's going to go back and play cover two. Or he's lined up at cover two depth. Everybody knows he's going to come up and play the run. We haven't fooled a single person. Why? Because our cornerbacks are still lining up in the coverage that we're going to run. If we're in cover three, they're off about seven yards. If we're going to play cover two, they're up about five or four yards off the receiver. So it doesn't really matter what our safeties are doing, but they keep on doing these dumbass disguises. So on one time, I'm going to give you an example. One time, here's your trickle-down effect for you. One time, Golson is trying to disguise cover two. So he's lined up in the middle like it's cover three, like he's a single high safety. On the snap of the ball, he has to run to the numbers wide to get wide for cover two. He looks up. Of course, Dane Fletcher has been on the play action fake. And so where's the tight end running? Right where he came from. So he has to stop, plant, turn around, and run right back to the middle where he came from and try to make a play on the ball. That is not good football. Line his ass up where he's supposed to be, and guess what? Both of our safeties are guys who do better going forward.
Right.
So if he sees it right now, he's got a chance to make a play on the ball. But telling him to run all the way to the numbers and then turn around and run all the way back to the middle to cover for Dane Fletcher, sorry ass, is going to get us beat every time. So there's a trickle-down effect right there.
Yeah. Now, I know we got a time limit on you tonight, Steve. I don't want to hold you too late. We had a question that came in, though, from our guy that does the charting. I want to send you his charting, too, because I think you would really love using it when you're doing your write-ups. He's doing a bunch of actual charting like you would do, like the other teams are doing against us, play-by-play, et cetera. He saw a number of times where we had three safeties on the field and Wright actually lined up on the slot receiver. Did you notice that in your breakdowns yet? And if so, what are your thoughts about that?
We lined up with three safeties when they had three tight ends in the game.
So it's just a matchup.
Mostly because we thought they were going to run the ball. And, right. you know, of course, well, actually, it wasn't that Wright was on the slot receiver. He was on the playing where a corner would normally play a wide receiver, but instead of a wide receiver, it's a tight end. So now they're all lined up right beside each other at the end of the line, and he's supposed to be the fourth guy. Well, he's, you know, as a safety, you expect him to be a bigger guy who can take on tight ends a little bit better than a corner. And so that was just a matchup thing where we felt like putting him in there, you know, he could match up with, you know, in theory, he could match up with the tight end if it was pass, but he'll match up much better against them against the run than a cornerback.
Okay. What I want to do is hit me up on Facebook with your preferred email address. I'll send you over stuff because I'd love to get you guys chatting when it makes sense because he's doing some pretty good breakdowns. But I want to respect your time limit, Steve. Thank you. Thank you for last week. I think you talked a bunch of people off of the ledge. And thank you for coming on this week. Hopefully we'll have some more exciting things. I'm flying out to New Orleans to see the guys. Hopefully they'll do us proud. And we'll talk next week when I get back.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
All right, man. Take care, Steve. Steve White, ladies and gentlemen, as always, entertaining and informative. And because you guys are so impressive, Mark Cook from Pewter Report has said, you know what, I'll sit back, and then I'm going to call back in after Steve's gone. You know, and when we didn't pimp this out as, hey, we're going to have Guestapalooza or any of that sort of shit, but this is what we do from time to time. So Mark Cook's going to call back in. I'm sure the levels will be all fucked up, and I don't know why, because it's on the same Skype line, so I don't know why they'd be that different. But when he calls back in, we'll have Mark Cook back, and we'll continue talking about this Tampa 2-piece. Let's get this back in. Hey, Mark, how are you, sir?
I am good, sir.
Well, look at that, man. It's almost like we have a plan.
I apologize. I wasn't able to listen while Steve was on. But what did he have good to say?
No, we started breaking down some of the pieces that you and I were talking about as well. I think he had some similar observations as we had on some of the pieces. Not all of them, obviously. I've got to, for some reason, the Skype levels are all jacked up right now. So, Mark, you're going to have to give me a second while I adjust them so people aren't getting blown out. But no, we talked a great deal about the specifics of the defense, and Dane Fletcher, as well. Steve is, let's just say, skeptical of Dane Fletcher's ability to play within the system construct.
Well, and I mean, look at what New England does and what Tampa does. I mean, it's two extreme systems defensively. And again, I'm not making an excuse, you know, for Dane. He's a hard-nosed player. I mean, he fights. I mean, but he's not comfortable in this system. But I tell you what, again, not trying to beat up the coaching staff here, but I don't know that they put him in the best position in that game. There were times, and again, I'm gonna shoot you these photos over, three screenshots of a particular long third down play I want you to see. And I'll be honest with you, I would love to do a story. I kind of put it in our new system. I don't even really know where to begin to write a story because I'm not a film breakdown expert analysis person, But in this one particular thing, and I saw it a number of times, on third down, they had Dane Fletcher lined up basically on the line of scrimmage on the strong side with the tight end, faking like he was going to blitz, then trying to drop back in coverage. Look, he's not athletic enough to do that. I mean, and he absolutely gets beat by 4, 5, 6 yards every time. You know, he needs to be playing deep. He can't afford to bite on play action, even if he's playing in his regular position. But putting him up on the line of scrimmage the way that they did just totally blew my mind in a number of cases. And it's something that, you know, hopefully when we get a chance to talk to Leslie Frazier tomorrow, perhaps he can explain a little bit more, although I seriously doubt they're going to do that. They're not going to really break down and get real specific about scheme things, you know. But I would just be curious to see what Steve's thoughts were on that. I'll listen back when you post this podcast because I'd like to hear what he has to say.
Yeah, and I think part of it is going to illuminate some of those things. I retweeted him before he came on because I was going through the timelines and such, and he made a comment that we've talked about a number of times. We show what became very popular. The Ravens in their defense would do these double A-gap blitzes where they bring linebackers in both A-gaps and just dare you.
Right.
And we show that a lot. We put linebackers in those A-gaps as if we're coming. We are never coming. You can leave the A-gaps wide open. It doesn't matter. We're not coming through there. But we put our linebackers up there and make them take them out of position almost by definition.
Exactly. And the A-gap also bringing them, like I said, over on the left. This particular one, he's over on the left-hand side. Gosh, I can't even remember if it was Golson in at defensive end at that time, but he's basically lined up right off of his rear, if not on the line of scrimmage. And, again, for him to be able to react and drop back into coverage, it's just not obviously his forte at all.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's kind of surprising. Again, look, a lot of the times it's playing with the offensive line's mind to a degree, okay? We're going to show blitz, but we're not going to bring blitz. But you're going to make them double think their blocking assignments and who's getting who. So I understand the chess match part of it, but I mean, sometimes you can overthink yourself. And again, I'm not saying that's what they're doing because I'm not a coach. I don't know what they're doing, but you know, just from the layman's eyes of mine, it appears that at times that's what they end up doing, which is very frustrating. And I'm sure it's frustrating to Dane too, because you know, again, he's not comfortable in the system now. You talk about that A-gap blitz. That's something Lovie did in Chicago.
Yep.
And something I really think that they were going to do with Mason Foster. You know, Mason had some success the last couple years, you know, with a few of those A-gap blitzes under Shiano and Sheridan. And really, let's go back to that first New Orleans game last year, you know, where Mason came in on a blitz and just, well, actually, you know what, I take that back. That was actually Adrian Claiborne that got the penalty for the ridiculous hit on Breeze when Breeze ducked his head. But if I'm not mistaken, you know, he got in there and pressured Breeze a couple times on some A-gap blitzes. But, you know, we know that Briggs and Urlacher and those guys occasionally did do that. It's completely different than Monty Kiffin. Rarely did you ever see Shelton Quarles or whoever it may have been in the middle, even Hardy, blitzing a lot back then. You know, it just wasn't what they did. But they didn't have to because they had four defensive linemen that were going to get after the quarterback. And that's something that, you know, again, not defending Greg Schiano, but people talked a lot about a lot of the stunts and things that he ran last year. You know, part of what he was doing, obviously, was just trying to create pressure. And you know, I just think he knew that his front four, other than McCoy, really was going to be trusted to really go get the quarterback, per se. And so some of those stunts were to do that. Now, 90% of the stunts that he ran were on run downs, first and second. Sometimes they absolutely, you know, got caught out of position because teams threw on first or second down, so it made it look like they
were. You mean you're allowed to do that?
Do what?
You're allowed to throw on first or second down?
Yes, you are.
No.
And you know what? That's something that frustrated me when Sheridan and Shiano would try and defend that. They would, you know, say, well, you know, it was a rundown. What's a rundown against Drew Brees? What's a rundown against Matt Ryan? I mean, I don't know that there are rundowns really anymore in the NFL. Hell, even Marcus Arroyo didn't run on first down every single time in this game, you know, this past game. So, you know, it was kind of an old school thing. But I understand that you know, some of those stunts that ran were you know, trying to generate pressure. And I've been watching a lot of old Buccaneer film, and I mean like 79, 80, 81. And even with Leroy and Dave Logan and Dave Pear and some of these guys, you know, they ran some stunts and things like that. And you see it all the time. Now, the frequency in which Greg Schiano's staff did it, you know, was way off the chart. But I started thinking about it and looking, and Scott and I were talking about this recently. You know, Greg Schiano's defense last year had 35 sacks. That's the most since 2006, you know. And we talk about the lack of pressure. They actually were getting to the quarterback, you know, to a degree. But the problem with that defense is if it wasn't on 100%, then they were going to get torched, a la the last New Orleans game, the Philadelphia game, a couple other games. Now, when they were on and everybody was on the same page and handling exactly what they needed to do, there was some success when you look at the Buffalo game, the second Atlanta game, you know, and a few others, too. But no need to talk about last year. I'm just saying that, you know, this is a completely foreign scheme to everybody on this team. And,
you know, Mark,
Greg Schiano ran some Tampa 2 last year, but about 15% of the time. You know what I mean? They were in like a cover 2 type situation.
And I appreciate what you're saying, but I at this level of the game, running base cover 2 or running the concept of Tampa 2, even the way Lovie implements it, which is part of the Dungy tree, we're not talking about rocket science, right? Now, there's certainly a difference in the minutiae and getting to the point where it was a well-oiled machine, but
right.
Basic things like getting to your drop depth to make sure you can cover the seam routes. Those are not complicated things. Dane Fletcher is not a dumb guy. We've got to make sure we're putting him in the right position and that he's not doing dumb things. And I'm not saying he's a, like I said, I'm not telling him he's a dumb guy, so don't go off the wrong way and think I'm saying that.
Well,
but by
I'm
God, if you're responsible,
yeah,
well, hey, listen, if I wasn't afraid of True Blood beating me up, I'm not really that scared of Dane Fletcher. But you know, basically, we've got to stop that because it's a cascading problem that occurs. Now, let's switch over to the offensive side of the ball, because to be honest, if my defense can get me five sacks and a turnover and cause some of the mayhem that they caused, I'm probably okay with it. Now, I'm certainly scared because Drew Brees is going to throw to Jimmy Graham 26 times. And Marcus Colston is going to get the other ones on those corner routes. And unless we get to the quarterback, like you said, you brought up a good point, and we talked a little bit about it before you called in, actually. Sometimes it's not about the sacks. The five sacks are nice. That's great. It looks good on the stat sheet. It causes negative yardage. That's terrific. But if Mason Foster is in there instead of Dane Fletcher, and he comes on that A-gap blitz, and he hits Drew Brees right in the chops,
right,
I'm not the guy that gets mad about a 15-yard penalty there. And I'm not saying play dirty. I'm just saying if you get there and you're close to getting home, get the fuck home and hit him. Drew Brees is a short quarterback. He is great at finding passing lanes, but he does not like middle pressure. So between McCoy and Foster or whoever else we can send down the middle of that damn chute, you got to make him start thinking about not being able to release the ball.
Go back to any success, and believe it or not, the Buccaneers have had some success against Drew Brees. They've split the series going back to the Raheem days, and there for a while the home team was losing. But last year, in that third game of the year, that's a game the Buccaneers really should have won. I can't remember what was the exact score on that. I know they kicked a field goal late to win it.
You talking about the one last year?
Yeah, the first.
Yeah,
New Orleans
I can't remember the score. It was one of the games where we had the lead and pissed it away.
16 to 14, I think, is what it was. I think it was 16-14. And to hold the Saints to 16 points, you know, was amazing. But the reason they were able to do that, Derek, is, as you said, not necessarily sacks. I don't remember how many sacks they had in that game, but they hit Drew Brees, and they hit him often. And think about Drew Brees in the pocket. And when he's got time to stand there and scan the field, he will absolutely pick you apart. When he has those happy feet, those dancing feet where he's having to move around a little bit, that's where he can make those mistakes and throw those interceptions, like the two that he threw to Mason Foster in that game last year, one that was returned by Mason for a touchdown that gave the Buccaneers the lead late in that game. So I'm totally with you. You know, the only way the Buccaneers can beat the Saints this week is to absolutely make Drew Brees as uncomfortable as possible, whether that's sacks, you know, hits 2 seconds after the whistle, you know, making him have to step up. But I actually take that back. When he steps up, he's pretty darn accurate. You've got to make him move left or right because he doesn't throw well moving left or right. Stepping up in the pocket, he may be the best in the NFL.
And it's interesting because despite the fact New Orleans is not doing well in their record, their offense looks like their offense. Right,
third in the NFL right now.
Their line's blocking the shit out of everybody. He's throwing the ball all over the field. Right, so it's going to be one of those games where we've got to surprise them. Now, their defense on the other side is exactly what we've come to expect, which is hot and cold, and right now it's mostly cold.
Right.
And so it may be one of those games where the offense has to do the unthinkable and win a shootout. Right.
If they're trotting out Patrick Murray three times in the first half, they lose this game. I mean, if they're settling for field goals in the first half, they're going to be behind by 14 at halftime. They've got to score touchdowns. I completely agree with you. You know, field goals are not going to beat the Saints this week. And let's look at this, something else I was thinking about. Teams coming off of blowouts, this is notorious in the NFL, and I don't know what the specific stat is, but we can just look at even this year. When you look at Pittsburgh getting embarrassed on that Thursday night game, comes back and whips Carolina. The Buccaneers get embarrassed on that Thursday night, come back and beat Atlanta, beat Pittsburgh last week. Now, the only thing to that is Carolina got embarrassed by Pittsburgh and then they got hammered last week, so it didn't exactly pan out. But the fact that the Saints are back at home, it is a difficult environment to play. They're going to be fired up. This is you almost wish the Saints won on Sunday night. You know what I mean?
Right.
You almost wish they did, but they're angry and embarrassed. And I saw on ESPN today, that was the headline, you know, getting the Saints back on track. I mean, that was a big thing that ran every 20 minutes, it seemed like, on ESPN News or one of the sports stations. So You know, you almost wish, boy, they had beat the Cowboys in a sense, because they're going to come out angry and they're going to give the Buccaneers their best shot. I mean, they're going to come out and punch them in the mouth, just as the Buccaneers did Pittsburgh on that first series last week defensively.
Well, and one of the things that's given me some encouragement is Coach Arroyo's play calling, right? And one sure. of the things, I don't know whether we had started talking about when you were on the phone, Mark, or not, but another playbook session we should do is on the zone blocking in the run game.
Right.
I've got to go back and look at some of these running plays, and my man Jimmy over here is giving us the information. We ran the ball 10 times on first down, and we passed it 17 times on first down in this particular game. The other thing he gave me that we haven't discussed yet is through the four games this season, our blitz percentages. Week 1, 32% of the time we blitzed. Week 2, 50% of the time we blitzed. Week 3, 46%. And this week, 11. 11% of the time this week we blitzed. And we've got the data behind this because he's broken them all down.
All right.
But what's interesting is you start to see, if we can see, you know, one point does not define a trend. If we can get enough pressure without sending those extra guys, then what that should do is allow us to cover some goddamn receivers downfield.
Yeah. But you know what? It's amazing. This team had 5 sacks in the first half, and Ben Roethlisberger completed 80% of his passes. And in the second half, they got no sacks. And I think I don't think he played as well in the second half as he did in the first half, which was mind-boggling. But again, without looking at that specifically, I don't know how many times they blitzed in the second half. And maybe it's a case of them. Okay, they didn't get there all the way, but they got him off of a spot and disrupted things. And there were a couple of times where Ben kind of folded a little bit, surprisingly to me, you know what I mean? I always thought this guy was a guy that, you know, shakes 3 or 4 or 5 tacklers. There was one time where he kind of ran away from even some false pressure and really kind of surprised me. It certainly wasn't his best game, particularly, you know, overall. I mean, look, he still had great numbers, over 300 yards, and his QB rating was probably about 115 in the game, but you know, getting pressure on Drew is going to be key in this game. And as you say, the play calling, and we did mention that right before I got off the line. I thought that was certainly Marcus Royo's best game. And the fact that he knows now this is his offense, I think, allows him to do some things creatively. Now, I don't expect the Saints to I expect them to, you know, play 2 safeties deep and make the Buccaneers work underneath and run the football a little bit. But if they do that, the Buccaneers should have some success running the football this week. Last week I thought it was going to be very difficult, and it proved to be, just because of the fact that, you know, they were bringing a safety up, they were bringing their linebackers in tight, and there wasn't a whole lot of room for anybody to run in that game.
Well, you asked the question about how many times he blitzed in the second half last week, or in this game, the Steelers, twice, and both times led to incompletions.
Is this our friend Jimmy Johnson?
It is. He's a machine. Absolute
machine.
That guy
is a guru, is terrific. I love everything he does. He gives me a breakdown every week that, I'll be honest with you, my mind is so overwhelmed by it, I don't even know where to start. I mean, he is the official Rain Man of breakdowns and stats. He does a great job.
No, he really does, and I wish I could spend more time reading them because I think they're really important. Let's talk a little bit. Let's train our guns at the New Orleans Saints. You've got to put your prognostication hat on here for me, Mark. Let's go with who you think is going to be a predictive MVP on offense and defense. Who you think is going to win this game?
Oh, wow. Predictive MVP on offense. I'm going to go with Austin Seferian Jenkins.
Mm.
I think he matches up well. I think he's starting to grasp what he's being required to do. And he's such a unique target, you know. I mean, he's not Jimmy Graham, let's not get crazy, but Jimmy Graham provides matchup nightmares because he can split out. I mean, he's basically just a big wide receiver. You know, he's a big, heavy wide receiver, and really Austin is the same way. If I'm Marcus Arroyo, I am putting together a package of plays, you know, specifically for him, especially with the fact that Evans is not going to be there. I think they're going to have to utilize. And again, I think that they're going to play 2 safeties deep. I think they're going to make the Buccaneers kind of work underneath a little bit, work for the yards. I don't think they're not going to allow anything to go over the top. So I think that's where a tight end can be effective. I really do. So I'm going to give him my offensive MVP.
All right. Now, what about on the defensive side of the ball? Who do you expect to see some special play out of?
You know, I really think that I'm going to go with Gerald McCoy again. I know that's real easy to pick.
Huge stretch.
I think, I think it's going to be crucial for success, and I think he's going to be motivated to do it, and I think he's going to have a good game. I think he realized he can play with that hand. It's painful. It's not optimal to be playing with that cast. I mean, it's hard for him to grasp and throw guys around, but, you know, just this guy's quickness, being on the turf, only adds to his quickness, in my opinion. I think he's going to really be, and hopefully, if you're a Buccaneer fan, you got to hope he's going to be a disruptive force in the middle.
And your score prediction?
Gosh, I hadn't thought, well, that's not true. I thought
that's
about it earlier today. I think the Buccaneers can keep this game close for a little while. I really expect New Orleans to end up winning just because it is such a desperation game for them. I think Rob Ryan's pissed. I think Sean Payton's pissed. Drew Brees is not a happy camper right now. You know, I just don't know that this team is ready and is mature enough in their defensive discipline and comfortableness, if that's a word, with the scheme, to be able to go and shut this team down completely. And I just don't know offensively they can keep up with New Orleans. So I think it'll be a fairly close game. I think New Orleans, you know, kind of breaks it open in the fourth quarter. I'm looking at like a, 34-21 type New Orleans win.
34-21? Mark,
yep.
You said 34-21? Okay.
Yep, 34-21. Yep.
All right. Well, Mark Cook giving stark kick in the face on the 34-21. Interesting. I like it. I like you saying that. I, of course, never pick against the Bucks. I always pick with the belief that we have to do everything right. And I think you brought up a lot of really good points. ASJ, I like. I haven't seen enough of him to like him as much as I want to. I like what I saw out of Arroyo in the red zone, though I'd like to see us actually utilize our receivers' height on those fade routes more than utilizing the back shoulders.
But you know what? I agree. There was one particularly to Vincent that was a back shoulder that wasn't very accurate. If he throws it actually to the back shoulder, it's probably a touchdown.
Yep.
But even that first one that Mike Evans was a terribly underthrown ball that Mike made a great adjustment on. Again, you know, dunking ears, all right, that's fine. But you got to get it up. I mean, you don't dunk at your waist.
No.
And some of these passes.
I mean, I do sometimes because I got mad hops.
And the ones that Austin Safarian Jenkins should have been a touchdown. People were complaining, well, that's pass interference, and technically it probably was. But they're not going to call it in that situation, unfortunately, late in the fourth quarter. But he's, you know, if that ball's up over the defender's shoulder pads, that's a touchdown. You know what I mean? And there were a couple other throws on that next-to-last drive that Mike Glennon would absolutely love to have back because he was just off just a little bit on those.
Yeah, now Calico in the chat room said something important, and it's something I've always harped on. Placement needs work, but the ball got to his hands. And if it hits your hands as a receiver, you're supposed to catch it. Evans on the first one, he got it to his hands and he made the catch. It was a hell of a catch. On ASJs, I agree with you, it was pass interference. And they'll say, well, there's no such thing as face guarding anymore. That's not the point. He made contact with the receiver before
Absolutely.
The ball got to him.
Yep.
The only way they could get out of that is if they say the ball hit the defender and subsequently was a tip, wasn't an issue. But if ASJ sees that ball short, he should come back to it and initiate the contact, and then the flag has to come out. The referee doesn't have a choice anymore.
Right.
But he's a rookie, so that shit can happen, right? In the chat room, guys think that the Saints can be run on. I haven't gone back to look at the data on whether they can be run on, because right now the way we're blocking in the running game, we couldn't run on a Pee Wee team.
Well,
so,
Parker Murray, he ran the hell out of the ball the other night. I mean, that guy, of course, you know, I think he's also leading the NFL right now.
He doesn't suck.
Running back. And I'm jealous, I'll be honest with you, watching that Dallas game. He's not a huge back, but at the same time, he runs hard. He reminds me, has a little bit of Chris Ivory in him, if you know what I mean. Remember Ivory when he was in New Orleans?
I do.
A violent runner, a Steven Jackson type runner. I love DeMarco Murray. And, you know, the Buccaneers, I don't think they have that, you know, I'm going to run you over and I'm going to be, or I can bounce it outside at the same time kind of running back, unfortunately. I think they've got, you know, Doug and Bobby are not exactly the same, but size-wise, they're certainly not going to be lowering their head. And that's something I do want to point out real quick, and I know you got to go and I got to go, but Scott and I were talking about during the game. One thing that is, you know, that Doug Martin tends to do is he tends to drop his head at the first level. And sometimes I think he surprises himself that he makes it through, and then, you know, he's not able to really react and bounce it. I think he needs to have a little bit better vision. And, again, maybe some people have seen the same thing. You know, kind of that Michael Pittman, you know, where you're going 100 miles an hour right out of the gate, and, you know, it's like a cartoon where your feet are running faster than your body kind of a deal. I think with Doug, if Doug could get, you know, a little bit better vision, I think he could bounce some of those, left or right and gain some more yardage. Because right now he's just not getting – past that second level with any success whatsoever.
Well, and I think go back to you were watching the All 22s. I'm gonna suck those things down with this tool that I've got here and try and mark them up. Go to 619 in the first quarter and look at the from behind the quarterback view, the third view. Mm-hmm. And this is a microcosm, I believe, of what's happening with our offensive line, and they've got to be working on it. It is a fundamental of zone blocking that we just don't get. It's not missed blocks. It's guys just going to the wrong damn place.
But, you know, that's why I'm not a huge fan of zone blocking schemes. I mean, I don't know what your thoughts are, but it takes intelligence. I mean, you know, and I'm not saying offensive line isn't smart, but you're putting a lot on these guys. I mean, I remember going back even coaching the high school days. I mean, there were times we had packages where, you know, we ran zone blocking schemes. It was much easier to teach high school kids, all right, you're going to pull, you're going to go right off of the center's ass, and you're going to go get the Mike linebacker. You know what I mean? Okay, on counter, tackle's going to run, you're going to crash, you know, and crack the end, and, you know, fullback's going to go up and get the linebacker. You know, it's to me, it's so much simpler, and you're asking these guys to think in a split second, because basically it's, and correct me if I'm wrong, in the zone blocking scheme, it's, you know, you're going to a spot, and whoever's in your way, that's your guy, or whoever's in your area, that's your guy, as opposed to saying, hey, in film study all week long, you're going to go get number 55, you're going to go hit number 63, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it takes to me quite a bit more intelligence, and knowing what the guy beside you on either side of you is also doing.
Well, ironically, you shouldn't have to care, right? As long as you do what you're supposed to do, the other guy, it screams on film. Like I said, that particular play
right.
is so obvious. When I watched it in real time, I was like, holy shit, who blew that assignment? And then when I went back and looked at it in the coach's film, it wasn't one person. It was three people that blew their assignments.
Right.
And to Mark's point, for the people in the chat room, the people listening to the podcast, With Power Man, it seems very simple. You say, okay, you got 70, or you're going after 94. Go find him, right? And conceptually, that seems great until they start moving 94 around, and then you're like, ah, shit, what am I supposed to do? It's Power Man. You need guys that are a little stronger. That's why when we had guys like, and you can take your shots at Donald Penn or Davin Joseph, these were road graders. They like to lock
right.
up. They're strong. They can win the one-on-one battles. And if they win their one-on-one battle, then you guys can do some really great things, right? Zone blocking is typically at lower levels in high school when you don't have guys that hit the gym enough. You got a bunch of fat kids, or you got a bunch of guys that are quick but not strong, and what you're teaching is flow. And really, zone blocking is conceptually pretty simple. If you're zone right, it's two steps and then power steps. And what we're
right.
looking for is, I want to see if he's crossed my midline, if he's coming towards the play side,
right.
then I need to block him. If he's not, then I'm going to stab him over to the guy behind me, and I'm going to keep on going.
Sure.
It's predicated on letting the backside guy free. Because if that guy catches the play, we just suck.
Right.
What's
that
funny is
sense, yeah.
we have been able to drill this to high school kids, to college kids, to hell, you know, little league kids. And it's just a matter, it's choreography. I keep saying that the line in zone blocking is a dance. And it's a line dance, quite obviously and literally, where line dances can look really interesting because it's all coordinated and synchronized. As soon as one asshole screws up, it all falls apart.
Oh, sure.
So it's going to be really interesting to see how that comes together, because this is one of those things. I just fundamentally, it bothers me that we were so goddamn bad at it on plays where, like, I'm okay with a guy missing a block. It happens.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes they just beat you. They're getting paid too.
Right.
But when I got guys going to the second level and letting the defensive end and the defensive tackle get in, I mean, your point about Doug Martin's interesting is he puts his head down. He can't get his head up. He got met 4 yards in the backfield.
Yeah, well, that's true. I mean, you're right. There were times when he didn't even get to the first level.
I mean,
he's having to lower his head to try and, you know, even gain, you know, any positive yardage. So you're right.
So it'll be interesting to see the breakdowns. I hope so. I'm a running fan. It's funny. My buddy Ronnie and I, when we coach together, we're the opposite ends of the spectrum because he's a former tight end. He likes to throw the ball all over the field. I'm like, fuck that. Let's line up and run.
Right.
I love running the ball because I think it demoralizes the other team.
Yeah.
And I think that we have the backs to do that. We've got to give them a seam. When you see them get a seam, every one of the guys that are healthy right now, Martin, Rainey, and James, they get a seam and they hurt people badly.
Right.
We've got to get on that seam. I did see a successful screen execution, which I hadn't seen in, I don't know, six seasons,
mm-hmm.
though it wasn't as successful as it could have been because, for some reason, Pittsburgh managed to do everything right once they got beat. But, at any rate, we will see what's going on in New Orleans. I, of course, will drop you a note while I'm out there and have a hurricane for you, Mark. I really appreciate you calling in tonight. Let me see here. What else did I want to ask you before I let you go? We'll get on the schedule. I think our weather pewter is scheduled for the 10th of October right now. which is coming up quickly. So I will confirm that with Spent, and we'll make sure we know what's going on. And I believe we're going to be doing a check presentation for our charity for this previous month as well. So it'll be kind of a festive event. So I'm looking forward to that. I think that's it, Mark. Anything you want to tell people about Pew Report? Let them know something breaking, interesting news, articles that they should be looking out for tomorrow?
No, just check us out. Keep us up to date. You know, we're really pushing our blog section, you know, getting timely news up as quick as we can, injury reports, you know, little tidbits of information from press conferences, things like that. Still, obviously, with some of the longer analysis pieces we still do. But, you know, we wanted to come back, you know, more than once a day, and that was one of the things with the new website development, you know, make some things, you know, develop a website where it would try and attract people to come back, you know, more than just once a day or once every couple of days. We want them to come three or four times a day. And again, you know, very mobile friendly on your tablet, on your phone. Come check us out at pewterreport.com.
Outstanding. Mark Cook, thanks as always for your feedback and information and all that stuff. And I will see you, I'm sure I'll see you before I leave or talk to you before I leave for New Orleans. If not, I'll see you when I get back.
All right, man. Have a safe trip, buddy.
Take care, Mark. Mark Cook from Pewter Report, our ginger badass calling in. We had Steve White earlier. Hopefully you guys got a chance to hear both of those. I apologize for the variable levels. I don't know why that is the case with Skype, but whatever. It is what it is. With regards to my predictive MVPs on offense and defense, I saw, I think it was Bucks Princess in the chat room. I think Lewis Murphy really impressed the shit out of me. He showed what we brought him in for. I think that he's the guy that people are not going to be able to count for, right? Vincent Jackson is still going to get all the attention. I think that leaves Lewis Murphy open to do some good things in the offense and really be sort of a star. And until I see us successfully block, I don't think it really matters on the running game, though I certainly hope it does. On the defensive side of the ball, I expect this to be a big game for Levante David. Levante David's had good games throughout the season, but I think this is the game where he has the breakout game and really, really makes his impact felt. The guy is just playing good football. And the more the rest of the defense does their jobs, the more I think he's going to shine and continue to make people realize what an absolute stud he is down here. And we start getting those first two cogs in the wheel for this defense and what can hopefully carry us forward to a number of years of success here in Tampa Bay. Skulls and Swords from last week. We'll go back. It's almost like Back to the Future. Look at our theme, a recurrent theme. My sword is to Mike Glennon. Like I said, if you're going to jump a guy when he does badly, you got to jump him in a positive sense when he does well. Mike Glennon did what he needed to do to get a win, and that's what it comes down to. Now, again, my apologies to Bucktastic. If you listen to the podcast, I didn't mean to be as aggressive with you on my comments on the quarterback evaluation, but the point is you can't just use the end results to talk about the quality of a player. That's just not fundamental. It doesn't make any sense. That said, from an MVP perspective, you sure as fuck can. And Mike Glennon, there were some just flat-out ballsy throws that he put out there. So I was very impressed with what he was able to do. But I have no problem with Coach Lovie Smith doing what he's doing, which is saying, listen, the quarterback will be who the fuck I say it is because I'm the head coach and that's how I do things. On the skull side, Mike Kanan. I don't know why his foot sucked in Pittsburgh. I don't know whether he was kicking a rock. But I haven't seen him play that poorly in a long time. We're fortunate that it didn't hurt us more. And I would have said that they had him kicking for a hang time, but his punts were not only short, but they were also not long in time and or hang time. So all in all, it just kind of sucked. So listen, it's 10:18, guys. I've got to get some sleep. I'm sorry I'm not going to go through the Swords and Skulls. I'll get over on the Facebook and check them out. I didn't do enough of this stuff for you guys, but I think you guys get the point. I do want to talk about it a little bit more with our minutes and time remaining. Let me switch over here. I've got the chat room so that I can get your questions. When we were talking about the zones that were open, you guys heard me, and I pulled this back up when Steve was talking. This is the Mike linebacker in the diagram, denoted with an M. His responsibility is to get back to this zone. In this particular configuration, which Matt Bowen is using, he has the tight end going to the flat, right? This cornerback is supposed to redirect the receiver inside, which he does, which makes this a flag route when the guy breaks out to this corner. Right, this is where we're getting just completely housed. This tight end is not going to the flat in most of the teams we're playing. This tight end is going right here. Right? And this is not rocket science. It absolutely isn't. This we should be able to eliminate. And if this is confidently eliminated, I believe, and this is conjecture, guys. That's why I asked if this was a domino situation. I believe that our safeties are compensating for that. And they're not getting as wide as they need to cover this because they feel like they're going to get fucked right there. There's a lot of scribbles. I feel like John Madden, boom, right down the middle. I can't do a John Madden voice. But we'll do more of the chalkboard stuff because I think it's fun. And I'll try and get those videos for you as well in the zone blocking. I don't think I can play them real time. In fact, I don't even have that window open. don't think. If you guys want to bear with me for a second, this will be boring as shit to the podcast people probably, but maybe I'll cut it out here. Give me a second. If you guys have some questions in the chat room, feel free to do so. I'm going to try and pull this up and add a window for an application. Let me see if I can do this shit. I think I can. I think I can. We'll see. Let me log in here real quick. Because this really does explain or it really does illustrate is the word I'm looking for. Turn the volume down on this. Sorry, guys, this will be loud for a second until I can get the screen to render. Because they throw the volume up right away on NFL. If you guys don't have NFL Game Rewind, by the way, you absolutely...
Yes, here we go.
Sorry about that. I warned you, though. You can't say I didn't warn you. Let me pull up the games. You should definitely have NFL Game Rewind. I'm only going to play a small snippet from this game, so NFL gods, please do not try and file a lawsuit against me. That would be very uncool of you to file a lawsuit against me. Let me get to the correct play. Sorry for the dead air, guys, but I want to get to the right play. It's at 6:19 in the first 6:19 left in the first quarter, I think is when it is actually. It is. We'll start there. We'll pause it. Let's see if this works. Here we go. Live broadcast. We'll do desktop. Interesting. It's very small. Why is it so small? He said, chuckling. Must be a resolution issue. Pull it over here. Guys, I know you're sitting here with bated breath. It's all kinds of things. Luckily, I'm not watching porn on here, so that's good. App window. Ooh, app window. This is what I want. This is what I want. Ha! Well, that works. Did work. I gotta fix it. You guys are like, why is this guy doing this shit to show one little thing? Promise it's worth it. Ah, see, when I go to the other screen, the resolution's all jacked up. All right, there you go. So, this is 6:19. Let me make sure you guys can still hear me in the chat room. There we go. Goodell's watching, I'm sure. More chalkboard stuff. Yeah, so here we go. We're going to go for a play on this. This is 6:19 left in the first quarter. We're going to play it. I'm going to pause like a crazy person. This is the overhead view. This is a run to the left. We've got plenty of guys to block it, except for look at what we face. Dougie gets hit in the 19-yard line. Now, this is going to be from behind the quarterback, and I want to show you what I want you to watch. All right. Here's the alignment. We're going to motion ASJ across. I can't draw on this fucking screen because they don't let me do that on a computer, but we're going to motion ASJ across right to left. So 87 move right to left in motion. We have Javorski Lane. Everything is set up for this play to work. They've got one guy outside. Their linebacker has walked down. Not a problem because we got plenty of guys to take advantage of him. Every one of these linemen should take their left foot and make a short step to the left, a strong step to the right, and the whole thing should flow to the left. But they should be going into those guys that are coming towards the play. We should leave the right side or the backside guy free to try and chase it down. Watch what happens as I start playing through this play. Here comes ASJ in motion. Here's your snap. Okay, Logan Mankins gives a stab over here. I got to go back even. Jesus Christ, it's already fucked. The EDS is already fucked up. Logan Mankins, number 70, gave a stab because a guy went to his right. He's supposed to be going to the left. So he's going to the left, which he should. EDS is already working to the second level. This play is already fucked right here. Now, 66 is coming across, expecting to see someone. He's giving a stab as well, but 69 is really supposed to get him because we don't care about the backside of this play. Doesn't matter. We let them both through. Both of them are now free runners. At this point, the Steelers have numbers matched up. We're doubling the defensive end, which we don't need to do. And this play is doomed because Dougie's got nowhere to go. Let's go back and see that again one more time. Hopefully this is making sense to you guys. Here's the snap. Watch EDS. See, EDS gets him in his shoulder, but he's supposed to stay there. You can't go anywhere, Evan. You're not allowed to go anywhere. You see me? Oh, shit. Hold on. Hold on. Oh, I've been talking this whole fucking time. I'm an asshole. I am such an asshole. Is that better? All right, well, we're gonna run them back real quick. Do you guys see an actual football screen? Oh, fuck me. Here we go. All right, we got to get back to the play because the NFL game rewind fucks you from time to time and brings you back to the beginning here. 6:19. We'll talk about it again. Come on, NFL game rewind. You were working when I didn't have you on screen. You were working beautifully. All right, 6:19. Here we go. Overhead view. Here is the play that sucks. Boom. Doug Martin has no fucking prayer. You guys, let me know you can see it in there. I know you can, because I see it in my Medicam, because I was all excited. Here, hold on. Oh, wait, give me my pause button. Pause. All right, I'm going to wait till the chat room tells me they can see this, because this is exciting. I like doing this. Someone in the chat room, tell me you're alive. King Brutal, Bucks Princess, I see you over there. You guys should be able to see this. Okay, there we go. Jackie said it. So, we've already motioned ASJ over. ASJ moved from right to left. We've got plenty of numbers. They're creeping a guy down, which is going to help them. But in general, we should be able to get a hat on a hat and have a chance to block here. Here's where we're screwed. Logan Mankins, number 70. It's left of center. I can't highlight. He gives a stab to the defensive end. EDS takes him on the shoulder, which he also shouldn't do. And EDS walks to the back to the second level and lets this guy come right through. This is where this play gets fucked. Now on the other side, 66 does the same thing, expecting backside help that doesn't come. So we'll advance a little bit more. There they are. Both of them are free. Now we now have two guys going to the second level to block guys that have nothing to do with this play. Why do we leave the backside guy? Because he can't fucking stop the play, we don't care. And this is what it ends up being. If you'll notice, in this particular play, had the two guys who broke free been blocked, there is a seam to run through. Hopefully that made sense, guys. I will try and get this downloaded so that I can actually mark it up. And if I can mark it up, I'll draw where the blocks are supposed to be and all that sort of stuff, and hopefully it'll make sense. But it is, in fact, a microcosm of what we do wrong in run blocking. Zone blocking is predicated. It's predicated on everyone doing their goddamn job, right? But he can't get there when there's two guys who are completely unblocked. So I'll draw this up as best I can and try and get the download and stuff work, but that's zone blocking, and if you want to go research this, there's just hours and hours of study film on this available for free on YouTube and everywhere else. And when you hear me say things like right foot, right foot, it's the way you drill guys coming out of their stance to start moving in the direction of the play. That's the other reason why it's really, your keys on defense are pretty simple. You know it's going to be a pass because you're not seeing that same progression on the offensive line. So I am quite certain that our offensive coaches are doing this. This is not rocket science. I don't claim to be a rocket scientist. But when it comes to zone blocking, when we talk about why there aren't holes, this is why. That backside guy, if you notice, he doesn't even fucking chase the play down. That guy is definitely getting his ass chewed in film review, because he doesn't even follow the play. So if EDS makes his block And 66 makes, and I'm so sorry, I don't know 66's name. I don't know the names of some of these guys, and that's the first year in as long as I can remember that I don't have everyone's name memorized. I'm going to assume it's Amame, but I don't know that it is. But our guard on that side, doing fuck all, lets both of these guys through, and that play is just screwed. It was Amame. Good. That's right. So, anyway, hopefully you guys found that interesting. With regards to this week, I've already given you my predictive MVPs, and I gave you my Swords and Skulls last week. I actually predict a win. I love going to New Orleans. I will be there. If you're going to be there, hit me up. We'll get together and have a drink. And I think we're going to walk away with a win this week. I think we're going to get another win. I think that our defense is going to step up. I think that the things they're doing wrong are imminently correctable. I actually think that this fucking offensive line problem is imminently correctable as well. And if they can fix this, then like Jimmy Johnson said in the chat room and like some other people said, we can run. These guys can block. We talked about this during preseason, guys. It's not that these guys can't physically block people. They've got to get to the right people to block. That's different. And I think we can do it. So, with no further ado or anything else, I'm going to try and find the music and get out of here, and I will see you guys. There'll be two more Patches articles coming out, and I will see you guys in New Orleans. I'll be tweeting. If you want to tweet with me, do that. If you want to go to New Orleans and have drinks with me, do that. But until next week, I am Old School, and I am out of here.
So I give zero f-